Hello, Roy here. I just wanted to let you know that you can listen to The Roy Green Show ad-free on Amazon Music, included with Prime.
This story is fascinating on Global News this past week. And let me just read you a couple of lines. Researchers have revealed that they received a radio signal from an ancient galaxy that's nearly 9 billion light years away. 9 billion light years away. The radio frequency signal was picked up by the giant meter wave radio telescope in India and originated in the galaxy, and they have a lot of letters and numbers, alphanumeric galaxy, located 8.8 billion light years from Earth. So unless I have this wrong, I don't remember grade 9, light travels at the speed of 186,000 miles per second. So this galaxy is 8.8 billion light years away. That is one heck of a long way away. And sometimes, you know, you can be listening to your favorite radio station and you can drift in and out of the signal 20 miles from the transmitter of the station. And this thing's coming in from 8.8 billion light years. I have no idea what it sounds like. I don't know what we do with that. I don't know what the opportunities and options are. Let's talk about that with Chris Rutkowski, science writer who's written extensively on UFOs and related subjects. Chris has degrees in science and education and recently retired from the University of Manitoba. We have some other issues to talk to Chris about this half hour, but let's start with this. Chris, some context here. 8.8, so 9 billion light years away. That's a long way.
It is a long way. And to put it in some context, the universe itself, the whole universe is only thought to be about 14 or 15 billion years old. So this galaxy is really, really out there.
So how do we pick up a signal that comes from so far away? And can we even do the math to determine how long? Well, we know it's 8.8 billion years, I guess. But what does that signal sound like? Do we have like a top 40 coming in from, you know, the galaxy, the alphanumeric galaxy? What kind of signal do you think it would be?
Well, it's just really a burst of energy, and that's all it is. You know, calling it a radio signal is you know, maybe misleading a bit in the sense it's not, like you say, not a top 40. It's not the latest news from Alpha Centauri or anything like that. it's actually just a burst of energy that just happens to be in the radio part of the spectrum. The frequency just happens to be in that area. And it's actually a trick that they were able to detect this so far away. There's something called gravitational lensing, which is usually applied to light, and that is that if there's a very massive object between us and something far away, the light from that object far away will actually bend, and we can see it very easily. And what it is, you know, light's just at a certain frequency, and the radio signal's at a certain frequency. So this radio signal from this galaxy, just as happenstance has it, to be directly in line with another object, and that's how they're able to see so far away. I mean, we can detect radio signals from, you know, other galaxies, and, you know, it's almost commonplace now, but to have one from this far away is only through a sort of a trick of nature, and it's really quite remarkable, and it really does allow astronomers to probe very, very early in the lifetime of the universe. I mean, this goes back, two-thirds of the way before, when the universe was created. So this is really probing the origin of our world and universe itself.
Yeah, the news story said this is from an era long before our own solar system materialized. But what do we do with this kind of information? What's the destiny? What's the objective? What happens when you get this kind of information, this kind of energy burst?
Well, you know, it's basically a gee whiz kind of thing. But the idea is that we are able to probe the origin of our universe and better understand, how old the universe is and the age of stars, the age of matter. And, in that context, being able to understand our own sun. And you mentioned the solar system, Earth has only been around 4.5 billion years or so. And to have something, send a signal in our direction, it's actually not in our direction, it's going off in all directions, but we're detecting it, almost twice as far away as that. It says that, you know, we're very small in terms of the rest of the universe, but being able to put us in this perspective is quite a scientific achievement, and this is really allowing the advancement of science.
Okay, I have to ask you the question. Is there intelligent life somewhere else in the universe?
Well, there better be, because there's not much of it down here, I can tell you that much.
Yeah, I thought you'd say that.
Most astronomers are in agreement that there probably is intelligent life out there in the universe somewhere, just that the distance is so great. I mean, just imagine if there was or is a planet around a star, much like our sun or something like that, around that particular galaxy that's 9 billion light years away. We would have no way of knowing, no way of contacting it, no way of having any communication. And, you know, that's just something we can detect. There's stars and galaxies much further away, and who knows how many in between. So we really don't know. We have a fairly good guess that there might be planets around some stars near us that may have some life. There might even be life within our solar system. I know there's efforts being launched by NASA in a little while to go to some of Jupiter or Saturn's moons, for example. And there is always this hope that there's something still on Mars. But, you know, right now it's anybody's guess.
Mm-hmm. Now, some people say, and you know this far better than I do, but I've just read some accounts. Some people say we should not try to answer or shouldn't pursue a signal or a burst of energy, as you described it, like this that has come from 8.8 billion light years away. Because we don't know how friendly or unfriendly the source of that particular energy burst might be, but it's been so long. They can't be upset with us over anything, I don't think.
Yeah, you'd think that we wouldn't water under the bridge or whatever.
There's a time limit, right, on any
time limit. Yeah. But, you know, we do receive and detect radio signals from things much, much closer, mm-hmm. and we do detect planets detect the building blocks of life are being detected around planets not that far away from us, a stone's throw. Right now, Avatar is in the theaters right now, and, you know, that's based on a possibility that the watery planet or object that the Avatar creatures are on is actually a theorized satellite or theorized moon around a planet that's orbiting around Alpha Centauri, actually not Alpha Centauri, but one of the other Centauris, I think, which is the closest star to Earth. And that's, only three or four light years away. So that's really, really close. And it just shows you that, you know, the possibilities are there. And somebody's, James Cameron and others have speculated wildly about what life might be like that close to us. And, you know, there's other possibilities.
Years ago, I interviewed Jay Allen. Is it Jay Allen Hynek?
Yeah.
So I interviewed him after Close Encounters of the Third Kind came out. And he had something to do with that movie. I forget what it was. Maybe he was a consultant. But I asked him, how close to the truth could that possibly be? And he said to me, I'll never forget this, a lot closer than you might imagine, Mr. Green. I don't know if he had hold of both of my legs, was pulling real hard, or whether he was telling me something.
Well, you know, Alan, I knew Alan Hynek a little bit. He actually stayed over at my home when he came to Winnipeg a couple of times. His textbook on astronomy was one of the ones that I used when I was taking astronomy in university. So, you know, he knew his stuff. And he was not only an astronomer, a very good astronomer, but also was very much interested in UFOs, or now UAPs, and actually looked at evidence. He was the United States Air Force's hitman when it came to UFO reports. And, you know, he had seen a lot more things and heard a lot more things than that most people did. So, you know, he wasn't speaking just out of his hat. He was speaking from some experience.
Okay. I want to ask you about that. The asteroid that came within, I think it was 3,600 kilometers of Earth, and we've seen the report saying that's closer than anything else has come to Earth. And are we correct that we didn't know about this thing until fairly recently?
Yeah, it was discovered by an amateur astronomer, actually, who was devoted to checking out things in the sky. And it was only discovered very shortly before
it arrived.
Came up.
Yeah. What about this asteroid? So it was the size of a delivery truck, we understand. It came to within 3,600 kilometers of the Earth on Thursday, closer than many of our communication satellites. I understand it's the closest such encounter in recorded history. Was there reason to be fearful or concerned? I mean, if this thing had hit the planet, what might have happened?
Well, you know, there's a big if there. If it had hit the planet, objects like this occasionally get into our atmosphere, and most of the time they burn up. I mean, it's hard to imagine something the size of an Amazon delivery van burning up, but these things are moving so fast when they hit the Earth's atmosphere. They get really, really heated and break apart for the most part. From time to time, some survive the reentry, or the entry, I suppose, into Earth's atmosphere, and, you know, they fall to Earth. We have craters on, you see all the craters on the moon. We have craters on Earth, not that many because of atmosphere and weathering and so forth. There's a Barringer meteor crater in Arizona that probably some of your listeners have taken a trip to. There's Crater Lake in Oregon. In Canada, there's a bunch of them too. The Ungava Peninsula in northern Quebec has a very large feature. There's a place called West Hawk Lake in Manitoba, which is a lake that is a filled-in meteor crater from something that fell. It was kind of like a flying mountain that managed to hit the Earth about 1 million years ago or something like that, and 10 million years ago probably. And you know, these things happen from time to time. Now, the larger of these, smaller ones like this asteroid that was detected, you know, they tend to burn up, as I mentioned. Sometimes people see them as beautiful blue streaks in the sky that last for 3 or 4 or 5 or 6 seconds, something like that. The typical shooting star that you see when you're sitting around at your cabin is probably just the size of a grain of sand. Again, but it's moving so fast, it just vaporizes instantly and shines with a huge, bright, white glow. But sometimes, you know, things are a little bit bigger, you know, not just a grain of sand, but a football, basketball, something like that. There was something that fell over Alberta the size of a refrigerator that was spectacular to see, and astronomers and geologists were able to pick up pieces that were on the ground, and they were still... they weren't hot or anything like that, but they were, you know, very significant and picked up and sent to museums. So from time to time, but, you know, the possibility of something like this coming down and causing a big sploosh, like we see in some of the Hollywood movies, pretty unlikely, but the possibility is there, but nothing to... to lose sleep over, I don't.
Okay, so we don't need Bruce Willis and his band of meteor movers. Now, what about the story about the Earth's core stopping spinning in 2009, and then it's speculated by some, maybe there's evidence, I don't know, that it could be spinning in the opposite direction now. Is that significant? Is it something that we should be, I don't know, worried about or keeping an eye on, or what's going on?
Well, I think we should always be, a little bit interested in what the Earth itself is doing. I mean, this is us. We're living on this rocky thing that's flying around through space. And you know, for comparison, if the size of the Earth was reduced to the size of an apple, let's say, and when you pick up an apple and you sort of breathe on it a little bit and get that little film of your breath, a little moisture, to polish it up. That thickness of your moisture breath is the same thickness as our atmosphere, or the entire atmosphere. In fact, the oceans probably would fit in that as well. So we're living on basically a chunk of rock, and the entire Earth is spinning. At the center of the rock of the Earth is this core, which is solid, and it's a little misleading to say that it's stopped spinning. What's happened? I mean, the Earth is constantly spinning. All of us are constantly spinning. But what's happened is that we've...
Some people more than others.
Yeah, yeah. The Earth's core has always been spinning, and it's been spinning a little faster than the rest of the Earth. Sort of, we've sort of been lagging behind, I suppose. But what's happened over the past little while, it seems that it's slowed a little bit to the point where it's actually going to be probably moving slower than the rest of us. Now, what that means, probably nothing, because the amount of slowing down is like 0.1% or something like that.
Okay.
But the point that it's occurring at all is very interesting geologically. We simply don't know what would happen if it slowed even more at a greater rate, but probably won't happen for some time.
If you want to hear more, subscribe to The Roy Green Show on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, or wherever you find your favorites. And if you like what you hear, leave us a review and tell a friend. I'm Roy Green. Have a great weekend.
Hi, it's Shauna, and I might be a bad parent because my kids think french fries are vegetables.
Hey, it's Ryan, and I might be a bad parent because I went out for wings when my wife was in the hospital after giving birth.
Johnny here. I might be a bad parent because in my house, the tooth fairy gives pocket change.
But we're not alone. Len emailed us and said his six-year-old daughter's Tarzan moment going from love seat to lazy boy by curtains made him more proud than any dance recital.
And Andy left his two-year-old at the rink.
All right, guys, I'm sure we're not alone. Like Andy's kid.
For stories and confessions like this, make sure you check out our podcast.
It's called Bad Parents, and it's available wherever you get your podcasts.
I left a glove at the rink.